Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 2nd of February, 2021. And yesterday we had a tremendous bounce back in U.S. equities and a generally positive tone for the equity market yesterday, following through to a degree overnight. You can see on slide two, the NASDAQ 100 posting a more than a 500 point day with this comeback, takes back out that 21-day moving average, although to my mind, technically, when you have this sort of steep back and forth action, it's not necessarily a bullish. It can also just be a sign of distribution. So I think the jury's still out on the status of this market. I don't know what you say, Peter. What you're seeing that saw so much enthusiasm is it a bit of fading of this whole short squeeze story, or what's behind this move? Do you think?
Well, it's always difficult to really know for sure what's really driving markets, but I think it started Monday morning in Asia with a very strong session out of South Korea, Japan, and China. I think a lot of it might be there was a sense that the market was pushing back against the traders from Wall Street Bets, and with these restrictions also from Robinhood and other traders, and Robinhood was raising a lot of capital. I think it eased some nervousness that, I mean, whether you could have seen some unfolding of risk because of, they didn't have enough capital to hold all the positions, Robinhood, but that has been cleared. And as you say, we've taking back all the losses, and you're seeing Chinese equities being quite bit again this morning. On slide three, you can see how we are pushing back, and most importantly, I think for sentiment, we have these equity themes that we are slowly rolling out. So by the end of the year, we'll have a whole sleeve of equity themes, but the ones we have for now, you can see in the little insert here, and among those where we have officially launched with a portfolio basket, the bubble stocks basket was actually up almost 3% yesterday, and EM was just following tightly below, as closely behind, and I think that's a testimony to how strong risk sentiment is right now, because the bubble stocks are the most overvalued you could find in terms of valuation metrics. So I think that that speaks volume to the rebound. And John, before I'll let go on equities for now, also worth highlighting on the next slide, on slide four, that the VIX index remains above 30, and if you take a 1 year average of the VIX index, we're actually approaching longer term rolling average on the VIX that are on par with what we saw during the financial crisis, and is higher than the debacle after the dot-com collapse, where we also had pretty elevated VIX levels. So I would just say that stay on your toes. Market direction can change very fast. We are definitely going higher right now, but it can quickly reverse. And I think this whole Robinhood, Citadel, Wall Street Bet story, it's not over yet, although it seems like it's over pretty quickly in silver. Wouldn't you agree, Ole?
Yeah, that's bringing that in. But as well, I think we had concerns about the status of the market, and it wasn't even directly linked to what this crazy short squeeze phenomenon that developed. And so even if you had not had that phenomenon, we were a bit concerned on the level of sentiment getting to where it had been before last week. And so I guess there's some residual caution remaining on our part. But Ole, take us through silver. I mean, we had an attack on that big 30 level. It briefly exceeded that, taking out the nominal multi-year highs. But it stumbled then pretty badly. It looks like the narrative within the community is evolving almost by the hour on the forums. What's going on with this morning with silver?
Yeah, well, this morning, John, we are drifting lower. We are currently on spot holding or trading below 28, which was a bit of a sort of support level during the early parts of yesterday. But we are, the theme is fading fast. And I think it is the realization that, first of all, the narrative for this rally was completely false. There is no naked short in the market to be squeezed. And those who are benefiting most from this rally, they are actually some of the guys that these forums wanted to hurt the most. And that's hedge funds. Hedge funds, they hold the longest position in silver. They have been long for months. So they are enjoying the ride, probably also supporting it, or have been supporting it up until now. But the weakness overnight, part of that due to COMEX, the exchange where silver futures are traded, that they hiked the margins, just based on something they can do on a regular basis if there are any spike in volatility, or and that's obviously what we have seen. So margin has been hiked, so it's more costly to hold the position. Even though, obviously, if it is driven by the by retail traders, then primarily the demand has been in the ETF market. And the funny thing about that is, obviously, the ETF market is backed by cash, silver, not backed by futures. So again, if the whole idea was to kill the so-called paper in position, then that has not succeeded either. So. We maintain a bullish outlook for silver and gold, but obviously gold, I think, is just a proof in the pudding. Gold was basically standing on the sideline yesterday, was arm crossed, saying, "What the heck is going on?" Not really wanting to participate at all. And in fact, gold is trading lower this morning. So with gold down and with the gold-silver ratio hitting the highest level in 10 years, then and with fundamentals not. And with the story not true, then there is obviously a risk that we could see silver drift lower here in the short term.
All right. And Altea, we also have Altea, our fixed income strategist, on the line. But I kind of want to link some FX stories into what's going on and then open up a question on the fixed income front, because I think it's a key element of what's going on here. But it's very curious to see, given the backdrop of a very strong rebound in risk appetite, you don't generally associate that with a strong dollar. And yet that is what we are seeing. I would suspect either the one move is correct or the other, i.e., is it the strong dollar we have or is it strong risk appetite? But time will tell on that front. Regardless, it's important to note where we are in broad dollar terms. And you can see that another dollar pair has joined dollar yen and breaking higher, and that is dollar Swiss. So on slide 5, or pull up a dollar Swiss chart, there's a very clearly defined sort of head and shoulders or inverted head and shoulders formation with the neckline around 89.20, 25. And that was a very, cleanly taken out yesterday with a pretty strong rally. Now there's a key resistance line just above that at 0.90. And really the bigger key is, as I show on that slide and the smaller chart up on the upper right-hand corner, it's the euro dollar situation. If dollar Swiss is going to have any major move higher, you need to see euro dollar breaking down. And there's just not a lot of space for your dollar to start breaking down before it starts inflicting quite a bit of at least psychological damage on the bulls, because we're right up against the 120 area soon. And your dollar, very critical in psychological terms, these big round levels, it's an ascending trend line around there. Although nominally, in terms of Fibonacci retracements of the latest rally wave, et cetera, I would argue 119 is needed needs to be broken to sort of fully put the whole situation in existential terms in doubt for the euro dollar bull. So, to me, just the fact that the dollar is as firm as it is, has me leaning right now on the risk of further dollar strength. And we see that as well in the Aussie dollar, where overnight the Reserve Bank of Australia was out with a meeting, really putting the dovish pedal to the metal, if you will, with extending guidance on zero or effectively zero rates out to 2024. And raising their QE amount by around 100 billion, or not around, but to 100 billion more Aussie, just about covering the budget deficit for this year. So to cover the fiscal expenditures. And then in the statement, the exchange rate was sort of explicitly mentioned that their current policy mix is going to help put the exchange rate lower than it would be otherwise. So a pretty clear signal, perhaps, that the ramp in the Aussie has gotten them a bit uncomfortable in recent months. And then just sort of adding to the Aussie negative energy here, we had iron ore prices dumping quite badly overnight in China. So I think the ducks are lining up for more pressure on Aussie here. You can see on slide 6, there's still quite some room to maneuver for Aussie, unlike some of the other dollar pairs, without breaking a trend. We could see it down towards the 74 area, where it starts to get a bit more important to maintain that support if we're to stay in an uptrend. But I guess one thing I'll say that could be supporting the US dollar at the margin, at least, is higher US rates. We're not breaking out, but the very long end in the US is towards the highs of the range. And you've got some thoughts on that, as well as the shape of the yield curve, which has been in a steepening trend, depending on where you look, for quite some time, even extending back into 2018, arguably, on your slide 7 chart, but really, especially since 2019.
Yeah, John, I think that the risk appetite that you mentioned earlier, the hunt for yield, is easily explained by the way that treasuries have performed during the month of January. And the reason why investors are looking for higher yielding securities, it's because it is clear that if you sit on too much treasuries at this point of time, so you park liquidity, you might lose a lot of money. And this is what happened to bondholders holding treasuries on the first month of the year. So just to give you an idea of how much money were lost is that treasuries across all maturities lost around 1%, and treasuries with maturities 10 years or higher had a loss of around 3.7%. So in slide 7 on the top right, I have included a table which shows what's the loss that you would suffer in case 10 years and 30 year treasuries move around 10, 50 and 80 basis points. And in the case of 50 basis points, 50 basis points movement up on 10 years treasuries would represent a loss of around 5%, and 30 year treasuries is a loss of around 12%. So this is supportive for higher yielding securities, because you don't want to be holding on treasuries. You would like rather to be holding higher income securities that can provide you a buffer against these rise in interest rates.
Yeah, and then over in Europe, where yields have at times indicated they want to head higher, and Germany, I haven't checked most recently, but they've pushed up towards a key area, but it's still it's 10-year at negative 50 basis points in the case of Germany. But the spreads are fairly orderly, it appears. And in Italy, despite all the fuss, it looks like the government or a new government could be formed. Is that your reading of the political situation there?
Yeah, John, the thing is that since Conte, the prime minister, former prime minister, resigned last week, we have seen a rally in the BTPs. And yesterday, the leaders of various parties have met in order to understand if can be formed another coalition. And we have seen the BTP rallying again. But what has changed considerably is that the Renzi, the political leader that caused the government to fall in the first place, advanced the name of Mario Draghi as Prime Minister of Italy. It seems that the conversations are not formal with the President of the Republic. However, the market is obviously now starting to read that if Mario Draghi becomes Prime Minister of Italy, the message that would send that would be pro-European, and then the rally would be massive on Italian assets.
That would be much more entertaining than any other scenario to have Mario Draghi as the leader of Italy, certainly a profile to be reckoned with within Europe. So we'll be watching that closely. Yeah, and we're also watching closely the crude oil market, because as we noted in yesterday's ISM manufacturing, the prices paid part of that, although the headline was slightly disappointing, still a really strong number, 58.7 for the January ISM manufacturing. But the prices paid number rising to 82.1, a level it only reached as high as back in early 2011. And if we recall back then, we had crude oil prices ramping from much lower in the prior year, and of course in the nadir of the 2009 30 whatever dollars per barrel up to over $100 per barrel. I mean, the crude oil rise in dollar terms is smaller this time, but obviously contributing to this prices paid situation. Ola, what was the approximate cause though yesterday of this huge comeback rally in crude oil, if there is any identifiable cause?
Well, I think the a nice big fat move in the Nasdaq and the S&P always helps, because okay. it adds to the risk sentiment or positive risk sentiment in the market. But overall, we just have to take our hats off to the oil market, because the way that it's been so resilient throughout January and now into February, despite the pandemic and the new variants, virus variants, which is delaying the recovery, the market has really been holding on really well to its to this mid 50 area in Brent crude. And as we put in on slide 11 today, what we can see is the market at this moment in time is tightening. We are seeing spot prices move relatively. Rallying relatively faster than deferred prices, and that is obviously taken as a signal that the market is tightening, that the overhang of supply is coming down. It's coming down potentially not because demand is recovering strongly, but because producers are keeping barrels away from the market. So the announcement by Saudi Arabia last month that they were going to do a unilateral cut for February and March is really having quite a significant impact. But at the same time, the demand from Asia has been strong, and we can only guess what will happen to the price once we actually see a pickup in demand, and when we start to being allowed out of our homes again and start to get in our cars and drive to work and so on. So the outlook looks good. It's still in a in a range here in around the mid 50s, but obviously trying to break to the upside at this moment, but some resistance here at 57.40.
All right, and now we need to move to earnings because the massive companies reporting today. Peter, take us through what you're looking at and where your focus will be with these a couple of these huge mega caps reporting today.
We have, it's basically e-commerce day today with Amazon, Alibaba, and you could throw in Alphabet and Google in there because of online advertising. It's sort of part of the same complex. And as you can see on slide 12, I've put it in the URL to the earnings preview for this week we did yesterday on analysis.saxo. But we know already, I think, that Amazon and Alibaba will do very well in the last in the previous quarter because of very strong demand and the lockdowns, especially for Amazon in the US. The mobility restrictions obviously are still putting a hand on the demand for online spending, and I think the same goes for Alibaba. There's still a lot of online spending going on a relative basis in China as well, and Alphabet we know with its they have their traditional search business will have done very well, I guess, since the numbers showing from Facebook and other social media outlets that demand is still very strong for online advertising. And then their cloud business will be having a very strong quarter as well. We saw that from Microsoft and a little bit of a clue on that. So and that goes as well for Amazon with their cloud business, the Amazon Web Services. But I'm zooming in on UBS, John, and as you can see on the chart, UBS has really been range trading now for quite some time, I think 4 or 5 months, and it has recently had a very bad start to the year. So you could argue, does this really fit with the reflation trade? And no, it doesn't. But you can always argue whether these short-term logistic costs that have gone up, whether they are just a part of not the real reflation story or maybe just short-term supply issues. But we'll be watching UBS because they've just got rid of their freight business recently in a planned sell-off, and they are streamlining their business 100% towards the e-commerce space going forward and simplifying their business. And it's a global logistics firm, and I think it's probably one of the best ones we can have on to give us some outlook on how they see goods moving around and also the price pressures that are coming through the global economy.
Yeah, that last mile delivery issue as well, where the prices had gone up so much.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's look at the calendar. Not a whole lot going on today. Bits and pieces like GDP, and we'll be watching for the pattern again of higher CPI. We have France reporting today, the Eurozone tomorrow, as well as the ISM services out of the US. But again, the markets are not working on current data. They're trying to look forward to post-vaccine. And we'd probably need to do a status on that in the coming couple of weeks to see where we're headed there. So I think the remaining key highlight for the calendar this week will be Bank of England and the degree to which sterling is sensitive to their message on whether they intend to retain that negative interest rate policy as an option going forward. So we'll cover more of that in a future Saxo Market Call. For today, it's a wrap. We will be back tomorrow with the next edition. Thanks for joining.